Yeah, let's get straight into it. Hello, AJ.
Hey, John. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
So you were in one of my first bands, Farewell Night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice.
When did you actually start playing guitar?
I believe I was like 12 years old. It was Christmas. I forget what year it was. Probably like 2000, somewhere around there. And I'd been wanting to play guitar for years. I'd been asking my dad and mom for a guitar for a long time. And I had a fourth grade teacher actually in elementary school who played guitar in class. And that's kind of like one of my first exposures to it. And so basically between fourth and seventh grade, I'd been like begging my parents for a guitar. Then finally, after a few years, they relented. And I got a Epiphone, like basically student, like classical guitar, one of those little packs you can get for, you know, $100 or whatever it is. And I still have that guitar today and still play it pretty frequently.
Wow. Then did you take lessons?
Yeah, I took lessons for a couple of years, and it was kind of, I listened to your podcast with Mikey, who's also a friend of mine as well. And I had the same experience where, I'd show up and then it was sort of like, what song do you want to learn today? And it was just kind of sitting there, you know, with someone just listening to a song and figuring it out and then just being like, oh yeah, here you go. But no, I mean, I really learned how to play from just sitting in my bedroom and listening to music and just trying to figure it out myself and then looking up tabs online, you know, back whenever that was. And then was always fortunate enough to play with really talented people, even from those really early years.
Yeah. Were you in a band before our band, Farewell Night?
Yeah, I was in a couple bands. My first real band, I guess you could call it, was when I lived in Savannah, Georgia. I lived in Savannah for a few years between like middle school and my freshman year of high school. And I played with a couple guys in Savannah, and we had a couple different names. Our first name was The Cinemas. And then we ended up going to different high schools. And then for some reason we changed the name to Axl Rose and the Kids Without Shoes. And then when I moved to the Chicago suburbs, my sophomore year of high school, that's when I started playing with the Trezar brothers in Barrington, who are great guys. And we played some covers. It was kind of typical, like, you know, being 14, 15 year old kids, just playing the songs that, you know, you listen to. And then from there, I started going to shows at Knights of Columbus, and that was really my intro to the, what we'd call the sort of like Chicago scene back then.
Yeah, I didn't realize, I guess, or remember that you were from Savannah or lived there.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly grew up between the Southeast and Midwest. So, I mean, South Carolina, Indiana, and Georgia mostly. But yeah, we moved to the Chicago area straight from Georgia.
And you lived in Barrington, which was like probably a half an hour from where our band at the time was based. Do you remember how we hooked up?
Yeah, I do very well, actually. Well, it's a really funny story because I remember... I can't remember if I was by myself, but I do remember being at Knights of Columbus one day or one evening. And for those who are listening who may not know, but Knights of Columbus was like a banquet hall in Arlington Heights. And that's kind of where the scene really coalesced in a way. And I think it was every Friday or Saturday night there were shows there. And so anyways, I was at a show one night, and I think it was actually you, but someone was walking around with Farewell Night demo CDs. And I got one and I went home and I remember listening to it and being pretty impressed, like, oh wow, you know, this is like a local band. This is pretty cool. And then I can't remember how much longer it was or when it happened, but I was talking with Bill Beckett one day at school because and this, we can get into this later, but as folks may know, I was also later in the academy, but I knew Bill and Adam Siska long before this stuff, and Bill had mentioned to me that he knew a guy, he had a friend looking for a guitar player for his band called Farewell Night, and he connected us, or I think he just gave me your AIM screen name, or we just he just connected us through AIM in some way, and then I think you and I chatted from there, and the rest is history, I
Oh
guess.
wow. Yeah, I don't remember Bill hooking us up. That's interesting. Thanks, Bill. And then yeah, you joined Farewell Night, and yeah, we were always a three piece, but then you joined and you were like a really intricate guitar player and added a really cool layer. I remember thinking that we were finally on our way. And then we broke up like a few months later.
And we broke a little bit later. I can't remember how much longer, but yeah, no, it was kind of, I listened to your songs and I kind of studied them and I just played guitar to them and made up my own parts. And then like the day that you guys asked me to come over to like, audition, I guess, or just, see how it went. We were playing these songs and I had like already come up with my own parts and was like riffing on top of the songs. And I just remember you guys being like, yeah, you're in the band. It was like an immediate like, yes, you're in. Because back in those days, I was a little bit of a riffer back, when I was 16 years old. I mean, I think I had to have only just turned 16 when I joined Farewell Night with you.
Yeah, and it was a really awesome time to be in music. Like, so many things were going on. Like, there were other bands who were writing awesome songs and thus up in the competition, and everybody was working together and helping each other book shows. It was a cool time.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all like really fortunate to be in that same place at the same time with so much talent. I mean, it really is incredible when you think about it, how passionate we all were, but we all had each other, and not just in music and bands, but it was also, later on after a couple of years that, we started, I mean, every band from that scene was being signed, and it really felt like it was taking off. And in a way, it was like we all kind of jumped straight up to the big leagues, like almost immediately.
Yeah, I think having a few places to play all ages shows really helped, because literally every weekend there would be a big show, and either our band would play or local bands that we really liked would play, and we'd go and watch and get inspired.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were like different offshoots. I mean, even as far west as like, remember like Wheaton and Darien and like those kind of far flung suburbs. And then you had like, some kids in Downers Grove, and then you had some kids in the North Shore.
And then, like, even Island Lake, and yeah, it.
Yeah. I mean, there were kids like all over the Chicago suburbs, spread all over, who would either come to Knights of Columbus or host a show in their own little like burb or somewhere close by where they could bring the bands that they liked into their scene. So it was kind of, yeah, it's pretty cool how that all worked out. And also just in this sort of pre mobile phone, pre internet age too. I mean, I guess like, we did have AIM, we had like Instant Messenger and there were like websites, and I think MySpace was around. I can't remember, but I think that may have been the early days of MySpace. But for the most part, it was really organic. It was just like people passing flyers out.
Yeah, the amount of people who have met and hooked up over AIM is pretty amazing. Like, if that technology hadn't existed, how would we have all contacted each other?
Yeah, I think your old screen name was John Says to You.
Yeah, I had a few.
Yeah, you had a few.
So, do you remember why Farewell Night broke up?
Well, I think Farewell Night could have continued, but I ended up leaving Farewell Night to join the Academy. So as I'd mentioned
Yeah, how did that happen?
few minutes prior, I had already known Bill Beckett and Adam Siska pretty well from going to Barrington High School, and at the time, Bill was playing in this like acoustic solo thing called Remember Maine. And, you know, he was really dedicated to his project, and, you know, he was playing shows and he made a lot of connections, and, was signed to the local label run by Johnny Minardi, LLR, like as his acoustic project. So, you know, Bill had a lot going for him, and he, you know, even early on, even I think even before the Academy, we were in Adam's basement one time, and he was like, yeah, I'm starting a band. We're going to be like, we're going to be huge. Or like, he just kind of like had this, he had this, like, you know, this, his mind made up that like he was doing this thing and it was going to be a big deal, you know? And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, and just kind of like, all right. And I was already in, you know, Feral Night, and, I can't remember how it all worked out, but they invited me to a practice one time. And this was when they were practicing in Mike Carden's house. And I just heard them play, and I thought it was really, really good. And I can't remember if it was that same night or some other time. I think we were going back to Adam to drop Adam off, and we were in Fox River Grove. And then Bill was just like, do you want to join? And I was like, yeah, but does that mean that I have to quit Feral Night? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay.
Oh, now we know.
And so then I went back to Kravkar's house, and Matt Kravkar, who was the drummer of Feral Night, and I can't remember, but I mean, obviously I had to go back and get my amp or something, you know, and just be like, sorry guys, but, you know,
yeah,
moving on.
I remember Feral Night. I mean, we were pretty good, but that was right around the time where all these other bands were starting to, you know, play bigger shows and even play out of state on the weekends here and there. And we never really reached that point.
Yeah. I mean, like,
we never even had an album. I think we just had some demos, and we were,
the demo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, and no offense against, you know, Feral Night or what we were doing with it, but it wasn't, you know, we were, I'm sure you remember, it was like very formulaic, you know, it wasn't maybe particularly inspired or that original, but it was fun, you know, and we had a lot of, I think, you know, we even had a small little following in the Burbs. And I think some of the later stuff that we did that maybe we didn't record, but I think there's a video on YouTube that people can go and search. It's, you know, we played some kind of like cool emo medley type stuff, you know.
Yeah, we were ahead of our time.
Yeah. And I can't remember, but I think you and Sean and Matt were pretty upset with me when I left Feral Night to go to the Academy.
Sure.
I think that's just how it goes, you know. But yeah, and then you ended up joining 504 Plan.
Right, yeah, which was also a band that was already kind of taken off a little bit. And so, yeah, what happened when you joined the Academy? They didn't have any songs or anything yet. You started from scratch.
No, they had already had their two first songs, Memento Mori and In Our Defense.
Okay.
And they had already had those songs written. And so then I joined, and then we did the Academy EP, which was the first album. It was like a 5 or 6 song album. I can't remember, but,
and who was that recorded with?
That was with Brian Zieske when, he did, it was called the Gallery of Carpet.
Okay.
Recording studio, right. Somewhere in the suburbs. I can't remember. It was like in a basement, and it was like really, it wasn't really high tech at all. He had this like Roland multi-track recording system, and just had microphones plugged into that thing. And it was very manual, although it was like a digital thing. Like, he'd have to kind of like go back and, you know, plug a, how would you call it? You know, the cuts back in and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. And then, and off of that EP, the Academy got signed, changed their name to The Academy Is, signed to Fueled by Ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that like?
I mean, it was obviously exciting. You know, we were all very young. So with that band at the time when I was in it, it was very, like, we all had, like, very defined roles. Like, me, you know, me and Mike Del Principe, who was the drummer at the time, you know, we were very much kind of, like, into our instruments. You know, we were, like, really into, like, riffing and just being, we were like really into like the musical side of stuff in terms of that sense. And then, you know, Bill was the singer. He wrote all the lyrics. You know, him and Mike were really the sort of like business end. You know, they're the ones who organized the shows. They're the ones who kind of, you know, I think arranged a lot of the stuff with the labels. You know, they're the ones who kind of handled all that. And then Adam was sort of like, in a way, like the band's mascot slash the kind of like spokesperson in a way, you know, if you could say. He was like a very charismatic guy, you know, made a lot of friends and, you know, was the face of the band in a lot of ways at shows, of just talking to fans and stuff.
And you guys went on some pretty big tours, like pretty much right away.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was pretty crazy because I think you had a similar experience too, where, I mean, we were touring in high school, you know, and my dad, who's a very, pretty conservative guy and kind of came from pretty modest and humble beginnings, and then, you know, went to college and joined the military and stuff, you know, like he, I think for a long time, he wasn't really a huge fan of the idea of me being in music, and especially not taking time off from high school to do music. And so I remember like having to write him this like 4 or 5 page long letter, you know, like almost like a business plan, you know, like it was, I had to like convince him that this was the right thing for me to do, you know, in a very like professional way at such a young age. It's kind of weird looking back on it now. And he agreed to let me do it. And I can't remember. I mean, it was at least a couple weeks off from school, you know, and all my teachers obviously had to sign off on it. And then, our first big tour was with, Less Than Jake and Early November. And I was a senior. Me and Mike Del Principe were seniors in high school, and Adam Siska, I think, was just a junior. Like, I don't think Adam even had a driver's license, honestly. Wow. So yeah, we're like traveling all over the country and just being crazy.
And did you like touring?
You know, it was, it's hard to answer that, to be honest with you. And, you know, like you and I have remained good friends, and I hope you and I remain lifelong friends, and I think we will, and I have a good feeling that we will. But like the band stuff, I don't really talk about very much to a lot of people, especially like in my adult life, working professional life.
Yeah.
Most people don't even know that I even did that, and I don't talk about it, and I generally don't talk about it because it wasn't, for the most part, a very good experience for me, and it's something that I've been kind of having to carry, you know, with me through the years and learn how to deal with. But, and not to sound like a disgruntled former member, but like the God's honest truth was, it was a very traumatic experience in many, many ways for me, and not something that I really try and think a lot about.
It is such a strange life to live, and especially when you talk to other people who have no idea what it's like. They think it's very glamorous, but they really have no idea.
I mean there were definitely like really fun moments, you know, like probably one of the most fond memories I have of any experience from the band was the first time that we played Metro, and this was even very early on. It was like just a few weeks after I joined the band. Like I said, like, you know, Bill had already kind of gotten the ball rolling on it. And I think at the time in Chicago, that the scene we were in was already gaining so much momentum that like when our band started and kind of came together, it was like, we were almost already, we had this success like almost predetermined for us. And so we were able to play Metro pretty quickly. And I just remember sound checking, you know, after we got loaded in and all the gear set up. And so, you know, before the doors open and before people come into the venue, they have the bands go up there and test their equipment and check the levels and all this. And so I just remember going up there and I, you know, turned the amp on from standby. They're like, okay, go ahead and play. And I just like opened this like big chord, and it's just like you on this stage in this empty venue, you know, at Metro, and you just hear, you hear and you feel the sound everywhere. And it's such a, such a powerful experience. And to, you know, think that, you know, just in a couple hours, that whole building is going to be filled up with people there to see you, you know, at a place that we grew up. And for me, Metro was such a, an important life changing thing for me. And, cause I'd seen so many shows there and just always dreamed, like for me, like at 15 years old, I didn't care about anything about, you know, what I wanted to be when I grew up, or I had none of that figured out, but I knew, absolutely knew, like for me, like the absolute pinnacle was playing a show at Metro, and that's all I wanted.
Yeah. It was same for probably most Chicago bands.
Probably. And it's interesting too, because like when you, you know, when you start getting into bands at that young age, like, you know, the music, like coming home from school or whatever job you might have. I mean, I worked at Jewel, like the grocery store, like as a grocery bagger. And, you know, you come home and like, there's nothing else to do but play music. You know, you just, you play guitar all day long. And so when you're in these bands, it's really easy to get really good very quickly because you're able to commit so much time to it. And, you know, you generally live fairly close to one another. You know, that was such a, such a fun thing to be able to have. And I remember even when you and I first started playing music together, you had that same drive, you know, and I remember staying over at your house one night when we first, when I first joined, and we're like working on some songs, and you were just like, we're going to be big, you know, like you were serious. You're like, and I knew that you had the conviction. It was like, you were just going to like will it into existence.
I think at the very least I knew I didn't want to do anything else besides play music.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I felt that in you too. And then even when you, and then after my whole experience of the band, when I went to school at DePaul and you were living close by, I mean, I remember, you know, you were going to school as well, but you weren't really, you know, I could just tell it wasn't what you wanted to be doing. And then obviously, you know, you went back, you went on the road with the Academy and you know, had a really incredible experience. Like it all seemed to kind of work out. And that's kind of another interesting thing too, is how it was almost like musical chairs back then too. Like, right. You know, everyone was in a band with somebody else, or like, it was only like 2 degrees of separation from like any other band, you know?
Right. So you guys were on tour and tensions were high, and you and Mike end up leaving the band. And then you decided, instead of trying to do another band, you went to DePaul. What did you go to school for?
I studied political science, which was, it's kind of one of those things where like I had, at Barrington High School, we had this, guidance counselor who was like one of those classic, like type A scary guys, who was like, if you don't have everything figured out day one, you're going to fail. And I was like, oh God, I guess I better like make it, you know, determine what I want to major like right away. And
quick.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I always liked history and in like English classes and writing classes. And then I just kind of figured, well, I'll do political science. And then I'm really glad I did, because it's actually a program that I really enjoyed, and I made a lot of really good friends. And I mean, I learned a lot from it. And I think importantly for me, it was the first time that I ever really learned how to think for myself and like how to stand up for myself, you know. And that's because that's something that I never really did, you know, in high school or playing in bands with people or whatever else, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then, had some interesting experience. I worked on some campaigns. I interned for Senator Durbin here in Chicago. He's the senior, U.S. Senator from Illinois, and moved to DC for a year and gave that a shot.
And you haven't really pursued music since then?
Not really. You know, it's been kind of a tough thing. I mean, like, it was really a dream of mine to play music, you know, and I felt really confident that it was going to happen for me. And, And it was one of those things where, you know, senior year at Barrington, when everyone was going off to college, and because, you know, college is such a big deal, like when you're living in the suburbs, like, and that's what everyone's parents, like, that's, you know, your parents want you to do that. That's their dream and all this. But like, I just remember kids from high school who I barely even knew were like, oh man, you guys are like, you guys are going to be famous. Wow. You know, and all this kind of stuff. And I just remember being like, huh, yeah, you're going to be really big rock stars, you know? And,
really gets in your head.
It does. And yeah, and things didn't really work out for me. And after that, I just didn't really, I don't know. I just didn't really have it in me anymore. And it wasn't just the music. I mean, I love, you know, I kept playing guitar for years and years and years after that. I still love playing guitar. I think it's just, it was like the, not just the business side of it, but it was just how, because I don't know if people know this, but like Mike Del Principe and I, you know, we wrote, you know, we were there for the writing and recording of Almost Here. But you know, our names appear nowhere in the liner notes. I got no credit at all for songwriting, which, you know, I participated in for at least a few songs. And, so for me, it was a really hard thing to grapple with, this notion of like, not only did people kind of take your dream or like kind of kill the dream for you happening, but then you don't get any credit, you know, or attribution or anything. It's as if you just don't exist.
Yeah.
And it's hard to start over again. And you have to find that endurance to do it. And for me, it wasn't going to be music. It was going to be something else. And I did, you know, I did continue to play with friends, you know, during that period in college, and I made some new friends. And then I released like a demo around that time, I think like 2006 or seven. I went to Alaska one summer between school and lived up there like as a tour guide. And I wrote a couple like cheesy bossa nova songs and came back and recorded one. And I mean, I was like really proud of it at the time. And because, you know, I was always kind of a technical player. And I think that was the first time that I really like learned how to write a song, you know, a complete song. And it was kind of weird because like at the time, I still don't think I'm a very good singer, but like I was learning how to sing as well. And I, you know, I did the vocals for my own tracks, but like, it was kind of weird because I wrote more challenging vocal parts than I could actually do, you know? So that was a really tough thing. I spent a ton of time in the studio getting the vocal parts. The guitar stuff was a no-brainer. I was able to get that stuff knocked out right away. And in fact, you know, when we recorded Almost Here, both albums I was on, the EP and Almost Here, that's the kind of way we arranged it. You know, I was the one who was the kind of clutch studio guitar player, and I was able to just kind of like knock stuff out pretty quickly. And Mike Del Principe, I mean, he was an incredible drummer. I mean, going back to this idea of like just how much talent there was at this time, you know, that we were all around. But yeah, I mean, and then I started a band again several years later, after that. I want to say in 2012 or 2013, somewhere around there, with a couple friends of mine. And it's harder when you're adults, you know, people have jobs and girlfriends or, you know, apartments and stuff, you know, and obligations, and people can't always meet up and commit time to playing. And not only that, but it's like that kind of, you don't have that same enthusiasm or optimism about it either. You know, I think when you're young, you kind of feel like this is going to be your lifestyle. Like this is what you're going to do for your life. And when you're older, it's people treat it more. It's just like a hobby. You know, it's just like a recreational thing, extracurricular thing you do, you know?
Yeah. I think it's really strange for a lot of musicians to, you know, come up against the realities of like what it means to actually be in the music business for a living. You know, when we're in high school, it is such a different perspective and your ambitions and your goals are so different. But as you go along, different things start to motivate you. And if you're in a band where each person is being motivated in a different way, it's just kind of a recipe for disaster.
It's hard to say because this is all so long ago. It's hard to like speculate, you know, of how things are going to be. And frankly, I haven't talked to, you know, a couple of those guys in years and years and years. But like, you know, of course, there's a part of you that thinks or likes to think that maybe things could have worked out or been differently. And, you know, I look at different bands, like, you know, after I talked with you recently or chatted with you, I looked up Nine in the Afternoon online, and I remember that's a song that you wrote a long time ago. I mean, I remember you playing that to me when you, you know, when I was a freshman and you were a freshman at school, and I think it was like 2004 or five, and before you'd even join Panic. And I looked it up and it showed the song title, the songwriting credits, and everyone in the band got a credit. And just to think about how like many bands did it that way, it was like a shared burden, but also you sort of shared the rewards too, you know? But I guess my point is like, you know, you want to think of yourself, like, especially when you're in a band and you're committing so much of your time and so much of your life and mental energy and creative energy to something, you know, you want to feel like you're an irreplaceable element of something, you know?
Especially the sacrifice that it takes to live that life.
Right. And then when you're made to not only feel like you are replaceable, but also not worthy of any acknowledgement or compensation or really anything, you know, it really kind of messes with your head. And when Almost Here came out, I mean, I had to go to the Best Buy at, you know, in Lincoln Park there and like get a copy for myself, an album that I recorded.
Yeah.
And it was a very weird experience. And, you know, I worked at the mall at the time. I worked at Woodfield Mall at the Apple store, and kids would come in wearing, you know, my band's t-shirts and like have no idea who I was or that I was in it. And I would just have to like fix their broken iPod or whatever, you know? And so it's just like, well, this is my life now, you know? And it's a weird thing. And I think you eventually learn to move on and work through it. And it's kind of one of those weird things now where we are adults, you know. I'm 33 years old and it's been a long time, and I've had a lot of time to think about this stuff and synthesize it and, you know, determine how I want to live my life. And I think from my experience with that, like I said, one of my biggest takeaways was, I think it's important, especially in today's age, that people stick up for themselves, you know, with against management or, you know, peers or whatever it may be. And these are things that you experience through the rest of your life.
And I think it's a common story in the music industry, especially. There's young people who are so gung-ho just about being able to play music and go on tour. It's easy to be naive and not realize that there are a lot of things you got to watch out for.
Right. Cause I think for me, it was more simple. Like I just wanted to play music, you know, like,
right.
I think for me, my goal, my dream would have been, I mean, this is going to sound so dumb, but like, dude, if I had ever gotten like my own guitar edition, you know, or signature guitar, I could have died happy years ago and felt like that was my life achievement, you know? That's like all I wanted when I was 17 years old. It was like, oh man, I was so into guitars and amps and gear. I mean, you probably remember, I always had like the coolest stuff. And
yeah, you always had an instinct for gear and knowing just the technicalities of it. It's hard. Not everybody's brain works that way. You kind of have a similar interest now in real estate, right? You're into architecture and you even do like freelance journalism and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just kind of happened. I just sort of fell into this stuff. It's like, I don't know. I think a lot of people fall into careers in a lot of ways, but I've been writing about Chicago architecture and neighborhoods and development for like 5 years now, or over 5 years now. And, my most recent full-time job was with Vox Media. I ran Curb Chicago. It's like a real estate and design vertical in the Vox Media family. And then, yeah, and then for the last year and a half, I've been freelancing, and which is kind of amazing. I've been able to, I mean, I'm not living large. Like, don't get me wrong. I just did my taxes last week and it was pretty pitiful what I made last year. But it's fun. I mean, I get to, you know, I get to go see new buildings and, you know, talk with local leaders who are responsible for, you know, overseeing this stuff in their communities. And even just like the actual lifestyle. I mean, I work from home and I control my schedule. I can take 6 weeks off in the winter and go to Arizona and go visit you in California, you know?
Yeah, which you just did.
Which I just did, yeah. And so it's nice to be able to just take that time. And so you're not making as much. I mean, I'm making like less than half of what I made before in a salary job, but you have a lot more flexibility and freedom. And
time is money.
And that's definitely worth something, absolutely. And being in Chicago for so long has always been another thing that I think a lot about too. I mean, I've been in Chicago now since 2000. Well, we moved to the suburbs in like 2000, 2001, but I've been in Chicago itself in the city since 2004. And, you know, over the years I've seen friends come and go and it's always sad when people leave, but it's kind of understandable. I mean, living here for so long, you like the winters do beat you up. Like on the news yesterday, they were saying the last time it has been 70 degrees in Chicago was like over 7 months ago. But you know, I think once you've stayed somewhere for so long, it really does become a part of your DNA, you know, and I've learned to make it work. It's like the winters here are brutal. Like for me, it's really challenging to get through. So I'm in a place now where I can take that time that I need to go and, you know, spend it elsewhere and visit family or friends and get some sun and be outside and stay active.
Sure. Well, I've also really enjoyed some of the solo stuff you've done, the Bossa Nova stuff. You should keep doing it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, I appreciate that. And likewise, you know, I was going back and because you invited me to play a couple shows with you several years back. And, you know, I was listening to your new songs, or I guess they were new at the time, but it was called New Songs, right? That EP. Yeah, and those were some really good songs. You know, you've always had... You know, you've always had the songwriter in you, and it's always so fun to see your friends like living their dream or like living their truth, and when they invite you and ask you to be a part of it. And you know, back when you lived in Logan Square there for that period, that summer, and it was a good time.
Yeah, well, yeah, thank you for playing. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thanks for being on the podcast. It was good to catch up with you.
Always good to catch up, John.